years old as well. So, I mean, clearly the history just goes way, way, way back with occult activity. But that's really interesting, though. That's one thing. I think there's a misconception, the Hollywood factor and whatnot, like we talk about frequently on the show. A big Hollywood factor in there, but I'm glad that you pointed, you know, out that entities can, you know, live in a home. It's not necessarily just all about possession. They can reside. They don't have to possess, just possess. They can influence as well.
Absolutely. And they'll just wait till the next family comes, the next family comes. And, you know, oftentimes when we end up, you know, dealing with these people, and, you know, I'm sure you find this with your cases also, you know, well, normally the people say, you know, I kind of had a bad feeling when we came into this house before we bought it, but I bought it anyway. I mean, in some ways that is, once again, kind of an invitation that they accepted, because they came in and their intuition, and amongst other things, as well as highly likely, you know, depending if they're a person of faith, they would be, you know, they'd have God and the angels indicating this is not a good place to be, and various other things of that nature, you know, but then they buy the house anyway. You know, it's so common. They'll actually say, you know, I just had this horrible feeling, but the house was such a great deal, I couldn't pass it up. You know, and so then they end up purchasing it. And so in a way, they actually have invited it into their life, because they were given a subtle warning prior to it, and they went ahead anyway. So, you know, that's very true that takes place, and it's very common. And the problem that you have there is now you have an entity that possibly has a 100-year-old claim to this territory, and it's very hard to get them out.
Absolutely. I mean, that would make it 10 times more difficult.
Exactly.
Well, another thing, I definitely want to touch on what you guys specialize in. Again, anyone listening can go to spectralintelligencesolutions.com. Check out their website. It's an awesome, awesome resource. But how to protect yourselves from these things.
Absolutely. You know, part of that is wrapped up in creating an environment that's not conducive to evil. I mean, I could, you know, start off with what we basically do to, you know, cleanse a house, which is, you know, we enter into the house, we have specific prayers of protection to, you know, appeal to God to remove the evil from the area. We utilize holy water, we anoint the doorposts, and we place blessed tetragrammatons, which is the Hebrew name of God, which is pronounced Yehovah, and we place those up on the walls and the ceilings and floors, which will not allow anything evil to enter. You know, that being said, as a side note, though, there are some caveats to that. If this individual has not removed everything from their life that would cause an evil entity to have some kind of hold over them, the entity will still have a personal attachment to them that will allow it to continue to affect them. So, you know, it's very important that the person cleanses their life of everything that caused any demon or diabolical to have a purchase or a foothold in their life. It's very important. But, you know, along with that, you know, we need to help people learn how to make an environment that's conducive for good and not conducive for evil. And so, you know, we offer counseling, whether on the phone or in person. And we can also refer people to, you know, pastors and priests that can assist them. Because, you know, if you make an environment that doesn't provide louche, that doesn't provide that negative energy, the entities won't have anything to feed on. So once they have no longer any purchase to be there, all the items that they were attached to are gone, all the obsessions and unnatural, highly, you know, focused obsessions a person has are gone, the drug abuse and things of that nature are also gone, then the person really needs to fill their life with love and happiness and joy and goodness, because these entities cannot stand to be in the presence of that. So it's very important that, you know, they fill the void with something positive, because the void will get filled, you know, in the Bible specifically, Jesus talks about when a demon gets, you know, removed from an individual, it goes out and it wanders among arid places. And, you know, that is indicative of its torment to these entities to not be within a body or not be within a place they can possess, whether it be a person or an item. They wander in arid places like a desert, and then they think to themselves, I'll go back to the place I came from, and I'll bring seven more of like myself. And they come back and they find the place well swept and cleaned and ready. So, you know, that is commonly what will happen. A person gets their house blessed, they remove all the items, but the thing of it is after that, it's really important to fill your life with happiness and goodness, because, you know, if it's not filled with something, it will, you know, there's a hole there, and something will come to fill that hole. So whether it's your that hole within your life gets filled by love and goodness and faith and things of that nature, if it doesn't, if it's empty, it'll get filled with whatever comes along. And that is what these entities rely upon and count on as well, that the person will continue to allow there to be a hole in their life for them to come in and fill.
Because a lot of people, it seems like a lot of people, they just expect, well, can't you just come fix my problem? But they don't want to make any true, like, genuine heartfelt changes in their lifestyle or their environment. You know, it's like they have this demon infestation from playing with magic or witchcraft, and they expect the paranormal investigators to come make it all go away. But they don't want to get rid of all of their tomes and their Ouija boards and their gree-gree bags. You know, they still want to hold on to their things that they loved. But, you know, it's like you have to change everything about yourself in order to make all of these things effective. It's like, you know, God's not going to do it all for you.
It's absolutely life-changing. Just like, I mean, you know, a person that's addicted to drugs, what do they have to do when they really want to stop that lifestyle? They have to completely change their lifestyle. They have to move into a healthy environment around healthy, supportive, loving people. They need to move away from all the friends that got them into that are going to continue to, you know, influence them to do that. They need to move, a lot of times they need to move away from their town, and they need to leave all of that behind. You know, in along with that, you know, I kind of use an illustration that I observed firsthand when I was a law enforcement officer, which is, you know, a lot of times in the area of the field that we're in and helping people deal with the demonic, people will come to us for help, but they really don't want to do what's necessary to get the help they need. They just want us to come in, fix the problem, and go away. But they a lot of times don't want to do anything on their part, and they don't understand that it's very important that they do very specific things to assist in cleansing their life. And one of the first things that's very important is that they be completely honest with us. And so it's amazing how few people are actually honest with us about the demonic problem and how it started. They never really want to explain that they had any part in it. And how that reminds me of law enforcement is it was very common when a person did something improper to their drug dealer, they would come to us and tell us, you know, I need you to help me, this guy's after me, he's beating down my door, he's chasing me with a gun, and we'd go, okay, so why is he after you chasing you with a gun? And they'd say, no particular reason.
I don't know.
he just has an issue with me. And we go, please, just we need you to be honest for us to do our job. We will help you in any way we can, but we need you to tell us why he's after you. And they wouldn't say, I buy drugs from him and I stole money from him, you know, so that's why he's mad at me and wants to kill me. No, they would just keep telling us, I don't know why, he's just after
me. I'm innocent.
And that's very common in our field, helping people with demonic problems. They don't want to tell us, you know, that they invoked a demon into their life to try to catch the love of you know, somebody that was, you know, unrequited love or revenge against someone, or that they've been contacting using Ouija boards on a daily basis. So, you know, we come in kind of blind, and, you know, it's definitely it's a dangerous situation to come in blind, and a lot of times, when things don't go the way we plan, you know, it is related to the fact that this individual wasn't completely honest with us and didn't give us the information we needed to be able to take the proper steps to assist them.
And I really appreciate that you guys point that out. I think on most of the investigations, there's a certain privacy and And the whole with us, what our team does is we interview the homeowners, the clients, say a husband and wife, you know, and a child. We interview everyone independently and separately, you know, to corroborate the stories and whatnot and make sure. But like you said, you'd be really surprised at how many people are completely dishonest about certain actions or things that may have provoked it. But another thing on your law enforcement background, I did see on Cops one time that this woman actually flagged down the police to complain that her crack dealer ripped her off. So, I mean, you know, if only we could have that level of honesty.
That's helpful, though. It is,
see?
Well, actually, you know, it's kind of funny, just a side little funny story. A friend of mine in a department in a, right next to the county I was working for, one time they found 10 pot plants, and, you know, I never really thought that it was, you know, marijuana was that big of a deal personally, but they found 10 pot plants, so they put an ad in the paper saying, found 10 pot plants, please come and pick them up. And a guy actually came to the department to claim his plants. I mean, this was back when it was illegal to, you know, you couldn't get a medical marijuana card. And so he showed up to claim his pot plants, and of course they
my brother and sister-in-law live up in Alaska. And they actually had something like that happen where somebody had dropped a pound of pot and the cops found it and they placed an ad in the classifieds. This was like 2 weeks ago that they had found the pot plants, and they were waiting for the owners to come pick it up.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, but there was also another thing. This just a side note. This I thought was hilarious. My brother-in-law posted it on Facebook. There was a sign that says, police have lost toilet, cops have nothing to go on. So, yeah.
Oh, that's good. That is good.
Yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit. But we were talking about something a little bit earlier. I know that this is really off topic, but from what Robin told me, Roman, this is something that you're kind of into. We were talking about secret societies earlier.
Yes.
The subject of the Luciferian agenda happened to come up, and I figured you were the person to ask about this with your background. What do you think the main purpose of this all is?
Well, that's a kind of a big question with a big answer, but you know, the surface. I mean, there's so many different layers to what their agenda is. I mean, on the general layer is to promote control, you know, in the world, to lead mankind in a very specific direction. And that direction, to a large degree, is in the creation of this energy that is brought about by human suffering, primarily. And the members of, you know, the Luciferian organizations, which most of which all hold very high-ranking positions in the world's governments. You know, they get given very large rewards for the amount of luce that they're able to create. You know, so if an individual creates large amounts of suffering and death in various means, they get a very large luce tally, and they get more power and more money and more fame. And so that allows them to continue moving forward. Now, that in itself is a very simple and low-level way of looking at this whole issue. You know, the higher levels is that they're following an agenda that is set by entities that are not human, that run things from above. And, you know, the Bible refers to it as the powers, the principalities, the wicked forces in heavenly places. And, you know, in referencing to, you know, the leader of the evil entities, it says that, you know, that the devil is the prince of the powers of the air. And in the course of my investigating these individuals when I was in law enforcement, I found that, you know, a large amount of them actually are very well aware of the areas of the spirit realm that affect the overall direction of human governments, and that they not only are aware of it, but they collude with them and work directly in line with them. And this was in relation to the last investigation that I did before I retired, before I resigned from law enforcement. Because during the course of that, you know, they attempted to kill me multiple times. So it was something that just I eventually had to disengage from.
Thanks. You know, to put it mildly, there are other words that I would use, but we try to stay family oriented. Now, does this tie into things like Skull and Bones and the New World Order and those, if you want to get into it even deeper, like the Freemasons and the Knights Templar and all of those at the same time?
Absolutely. You know, all of that, you know, Skull and Bones and areas like that, those are areas where they recruit. It would be like the West Point, you know, of their society. That's certainly recruitment areas. But there's, you know, a lot of different other areas they continue to recruit from. They recruit from the Black Nobility, which is the nobles and royals from Europe that no longer control their governments. I know that particularly because of my family background. We were originally from Florence, Italy, and so we had background in those areas. And, you know, they have a lot of recruitment areas in our colleges, and not just our colleges, but the other colleges and universities elsewhere. You know, they recruit from bloodlines. They're very specific about bloodlines. That's very important to them. And, you know, they start to cultivate these individuals at a very young age because they need to create a very certain mindset, you know, a mindset that looks at human life as being a commodity. You know, it takes an individual being nurtured into that direction from a young age to actually get them to feel that way. Otherwise, more people would blow the whistle on this. But the one thing that you'll notice is anytime someone actually tries to discuss this in public, they're labeled as a conspiracy theorist or a kook or a nutcase.
Another thing you need to take into consideration is a lot of low-level Masons are good people, and they don't really know what's going on in the higher levels. They're kept ignorant. So you'll see, like, on the History Channel, they'll interview some guy in Freemasonry, and he's like, oh, you know, we don't have anything to do with all that stuff. It's because they're kept out of the loop.
Yes, that's very true.
Because my grandfather's a Mason.
There's a lot of really good people in Freemasonry,
yeah.
But those are the people that don't really know what's going on in the higher levels.
Yeah, well, the lower degrees are kept focusing on charity and, you know, activities that basically help the community. And so they're not aware of any of the things that the upper individuals are doing. And, you know, when they're brought in, the organization already knows what direction this person is going to be able to go in. If they're just going to be the lower level individuals that they use as their public face, which are individuals that care about their families and their communities, or if these individuals are going to be able to rise up the ranks and be allowed into the deeper mysteries of what it is that they are doing. You know, and once they get up high enough, it gets to a place where they actually start taking direct orders from these entities. And this was what I started to find out near the end of my investigation, was that they actually were taking direct orders from these entities. It wasn't just, you know, a person being persuaded or moved in a direction that he couldn't quite figure out why. They actually were in verbal contact, and I was able to observe that and get information that showed that it actually was a regular ongoing thing. So, you know, it's a huge subject, really, to go into. But the fact of the matter is just that, you know, it's very clear from what goes on in our world that there are a lot of people that profit greatly from human suffering. So, you know, either that is without purpose, it just happens to be that way, you know, or it is a directed agenda. And from my investigations in law enforcement dealing with that, And my later research afterwards, I found, you know, factually that it is an actual agenda that they're following.
Now, something that's really started to take hold here is obviously the Tea Party movement. And they seem to be kind of, on the surface, rebelling against the status quo as it is. Do you think that that's something that's legitimate, or is it kind of like running interference with the other things that are going on as far as that goes?
Well, you know, anytime there is, you know, displeasure with what's going on, I mean, all of these things are fitting into someone's agenda, you know. On the lower side of things, in terms of the individual, you know, everybody has their own, you know, political leanings, their own feelings of what's right or what's wrong, what's too much or what's not enough. So, you know, the people at the low end that, you know, just like with the anti-war rallies, there's pro-war rallies, there's anti-war rallies, there's pro-government rallies, there's anti-government rallies. And I think that the larger majority of the people that are part of each of these different groups are sincerely doing what they think is right. But the people above them that encourage it and control it, those are the ones that usually are following the overall agenda. And the overall agenda, no matter what the political end of the spectrum is, it's all going in the same direction, which is, you know, that the right wing and the left wing are two, you know, are both attached to the same bird. And that the people that are directing things to be so contentious actually are wanting it that way. And I mean, I've seen lots of footage over the years of, say, you know, individuals in the House and the Senate who are, you know, at each other's throats, you know, hypothetically speaking, you know, when they're in the chamber, but then afterwards they're patting each other on the back and going to lunch. So, you know, and these individuals all get together and go to the Bohemian Grove to have their two-week party where they worship Molech, the owl, and they put an effigy of a little child on it. And, you know, they all are friends. You know, the issues that we see, the contentiousness that we see in the public eye is just for all the people that are watching on television. You know, it's very clear when you actually start to look at the policies and the way things go that, you know, everything is being directed. So, you know, in terms of that, you know, it's anybody can harness people's, you know, dissatisfaction with things and move that in whatever direction they want. But if you really look at it closely, you'll see that overall what it is all about is just keeping all of us at each other's throats and focusing on our own personal lives and not on the greater good and not on the, you know, the overall direction we're going in as a species. And, you know, that is causing a high level of chaos. It's causing suffering, and it's furthering the overall agenda.
That was pretty damn deep. No, I'm serious. That just made me go, wow. Now, who is Molech? And why?
Molech?
That's a new one to me.
Okay, well, Molech, you can look him up. It's usually spelled M-O-L-E-C-H or some variant of that. It's an ancient pagan god. One of his symbols was the owl. You know, it was a god that people sacrificed their children to. He in some ways, has also, you know, by certain individuals been referred to as being similar to Baal. You know, it's been found in multiple, sites in the Middle East, and in North Africa, and in Old Phoenicia, areas where there were altars to Baal, where they found mass child graves, you know, and some individuals want to say that, you know, it's just a, you know, it's just a coincidence that there's a mass child grave next to this altar that burnt sacrifices were put in. But most serious archaeologists agree that there were child sacrifices being offered to Baal, And Molech was a variant of that. And so Molech was, you know, the owl-headed god that people offered up their children to. Usually, sometimes it would have its arms outstretched, and they would place the child onto the arms, and then the arms were kind of tilted down at an angle so that the child would then roll into the fire. You know, at the Bohemian Grove, there is a large effigy of an owl, and they have their ceremony, you know, all the present, you know, usually the president at the time, and the ex-president, the vice president, heads of the CEOs, heads of the media. You know, one particular time my actual father had worked at the Bohemian Grove in heading the security team there, because he was an ex-law enforcement officer also, and Walter Cronkite ordered 40 mattresses. You know, that's a side note. I still don't understand, unless he was trying to be the princess and the pea or something.
That's where I was going to go with it myself.
There's just all kinds of bizarre activities that go on there.
But the most bizarre is what they call the cremation of care. And what they do is they have, you know, they all wear hoods, you know, hooded robes, and they play this recording and do this ritual where they, you know, gather around the owl and they have a burning fire at its base, and then they bring this effigy of a child. I mean, it looks like a child. They claim that it's, you know, like a log, but, you know, we all know that the Yule log actually is, you know, an effigy of, you know, a child. It's from child sacrifice. That's where that comes from. And so then they burn this effigy, and they're saying they're cremating care. You know, it's a very, you know, a very sinister thing that they do. But you know, and they don't allow anyone in there, and they bring in all kinds of strange things like mattresses. I mean, I have no idea what Walter Cronkite would need for 40 mattresses.
And be comfortable.
Yeah.
Let's just go touch them. No further imagination needed.
So that's what goes on with Molech, at least to the present day, is, you know, that particular ritual that they do.
Makes you wonder what you watch on MSNBC and Fox News nowadays.
Just like I said in my you know, in the last area I was discussing, these people are all friends, okay? You know, all these individuals, even these media individuals that sometimes seem like they're at each other's throats, a lot of them are good friends. They just keep up appearances for the camera. You know, but they get together at these resorts, they get together at these gatherings and these ritual gatherings, and they're all pals. So, you know, they're keeping all of us focused on each other when we actually should be focusing on them.
A good way of hiding in plain sight.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and, you know, divide and conquer, you know.
Yeah.
The way you do it, you keep everybody focused on each other, focused on the inequalities, so that then they come in and act like the heroes and save us from the problem that they started. You know,
jeez, I wish we had more time. We're down to the last like 45 seconds.
All right.
Jeez, I wish we had more time. You know, I think we should make this like a monthly deal. An hour with Rebecca and Roman. we tend to you guys definitely bring up some deep conversations. But you know, definitely thank you for coming on again. That was obviously fantastic.
It was fun. Thanks.
You're very welcome. It's our pleasure. And we'd definitely, you know, be happy to come on again whenever you guys would like.
Thank you so much, guys. And as a side note, I just shot you an email regarding the current case that you guys have been so wonderfully assisting us on.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll be looking forward to reading it.
Well, thank you. And again, anyone, I mean, they're a wonderful resource, especially for other paranormal investigators. And your website, Roman, do you guys want to give a couple plugs?
Absolutely. You know, any paranormal or preternatural problems you have, anything that's scaring you in your house, you know, things you're not sure about, you think you may be being bothered or followed by a demon, or there are issues that you have from your past that you need to help, you know, addressing, and you'd possibly like counseling to help make your home and your environment a much, much more positive place, you know, contact us. Go to our website, www.spectralintelligencesolutions.com, or you can contact us at our email at spectralintelligence@gmail.com. So thank you very much, Robin and Jim. And
thanks, guys.
We will
talk with you guys so very much, and we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Definitely. Have a good night.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.